on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, June 9th, 2025 edition. Happy Monday. Hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. Summer is kicking into gear, at least here in California, and so are political tensions, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about the markets, about your investments, about your investment strategy, your money habits as well. So that's what this hour is about, to help you become a better investor and to be better with your money in general, making smarter decisions. So not just one time, but time after time after time. Doesn't mean that you're not going to be wrong. We're all wrong from time to time. But it's about going into every investment with your eyes wide open, being able to balance the risk versus rewards, and not get caught up in the hype, the emotions of the investment world, which is very easy when you know, money is emotional. And then you get into different companies and sectors. Some companies you might have more affinity for or than others, but that shouldn't cloud your judgment. It should be about the facts on the ground. And that's what we're here to bring you that data, bring you that perspective developed with over 25 years of investment experience. So we encourage you during this hour to give us a call at 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question to me, Justin Klein, on today's show. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. I have a lot of good ones, but as usual, we'll tackle our first caller question now.
Hello, I would like to ask you about a good entry point for Dominion Energy, if there is any, or if you see more problems with this company in the future. Thank you for all you do.
All right, looking at Dominion Energy, this is a utility company, and it has come down pretty significantly from its all-time high back around $88 per share. Now it's at 55. Now, that's because earnings did fall from over $4 per share pre-pandemic, $4.24, to as low as $2.63 in 2023. And obviously, it's not a good trend, especially for a company that tends to be pretty consistent in its earnings. It's a utility company. Most utility companies are regulated. Their profits are regulated. And the fact that these profits have dropped tells me something deeper about the business. Now, earnings are expected to bounce back. They did bounce back last year to $3.85, then supposed to be down again this year, though, to $3.39, and then $3.58 next year. And it's a $55 stock. So you're talking about a high teens multiple for a business that's a bit all over the place. Okay, and that's a lot has to do with their wind projects. A lot of those wind projects have not been very profitable. So they have some issues, especially around their green energy deployment. So that would be my biggest worry here, is some of those issues around those rollouts. And I just don't see. I've actually done a deeper dive on the utility space recently, and Dominion was not in my top three because of these issues. And obviously, there were others that had more consistent businesses, more consistent growth of demand as well. You know, Dominion operates in the Northeast, which kind of has a mixed recent track record of demand growth. And I just think there are better regions to be investing in that have better population growth, demand growth, et cetera, that have more exposure to nuclear power, for example. So I would be looking at those type of names over Dominion Energy. They may not have as big of a dividend yield of 4.8%, but that's not what you're looking for with these type of names. You want consistency and you want demand growth. And so I would be looking elsewhere within the utility space for opportunities. This would not be one near the top of my list. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point concerns this topic. Drop in international tourism hits the U.S. economy and local jobs. This is a product of stricter immigration policies, stronger dollar, and obviously an international reputation for the United States. So we're going to look at some of the demand expectation drops for 2025 and beyond, and kind of what areas of the economy this will impact the most. So tourism, it's accounts for about 10% of the jobs in America, if you know that. So it's not a small part of the economy. It is relatively significant. So we'll look at that topic. Also, alternatives. I love this topic because so many people get pitched these private investments and alts, and they think it's this secret, cool black box, and it's getting great returns. Well, studies are saying the exact opposite, that it's just a whole lot of fluff and there isn't a lot of meat on the bone there. So we're going to look at some data there. Also, tariffs. There's a recent study by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, and they pulled 640 different businesses to figure out how much of the tariffs are going to be passed along to the consumer. So we're going to look at that data as well. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll look at some of the China data coming out of there and their manufacturing demand and how much they're being impacted by tariffs as well. But we have other topics on the docket. Most importantly, your questions, your voice bank calls. One is KSA, which is the Saudi Arabia ETF. And then we have Iron Mountain, IRM is the symbol there. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. So, of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now live. You will always be top of the list. So if you call during our 4 to 5 Pacific time hour, you will be put in front of the line. So don't hesitate to pick up that phone and give us a call. But we're going to head to a short break. And on the other side, I'll look at today's market activity and then answer more of your questions on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-CHART.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. you get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Cachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Cachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Cachava. Go to cachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market for today. Overall, it was kind of a boring day. We closed well off the highs of the day, but we still closed in the green, but only modestly so. S&P was up 5 points. That's 9 basis points. Pretty much a flat day there. NASDAQ did a little bit better, up 36 points, but that's only 17 basis points. So not a whole lot. And the Dow actually closed down a whole 1 point, basically flat. And if you look at the heat map, even the Mag 7, you had Tesla did the best, but that's obviously coming off a tough and near end of last week. Thursday was the big down day there, kind of getting a bounce back. But Meta and Apple down. Apple had a WDC event, kind of uneventful. Broadcom continues to be in the red after its earnings. Google did fairly well, 1.4%. The worst sector was the finance sector overall. So I thought that was interesting. Insurance companies had a rougher day than they normally do. So that was interesting. And yeah, there's not a whole lot. This is not a week where I'm expecting a whole lot of fireworks. Last week, we had a lot of economic data. I think the market overestimated the strength of the labor market based on that data. But it is what it is. This week, we have no big data until Wednesday, which is the CPI number. Once again, it's a CPI. It gives good headlines, but it's not really as important as like the PCE number, which we got last week. We are getting the producer prices index. So PPI, I think that is more important than the headline on Wednesday. PPI feeds into PCE and CPI going forward. It's a leading indicator of where inflation is going. And then we get consumer sentiment on Friday. So it's just kind of a light week as we head into next week, which is, I think, has the potential for more fireworks. You have OPEX week, as well as the Fed announcement, which they're not going to do anything. They're not going to change any rates tomorrow. But what happens with QT? What happens with their signaling towards rate cuts in the future, et cetera? And those could be market-moving events. This week, I don't expect a lot of fireworks. Obviously, a lot could change, but it's not a week that I expect a whole lot of market movements, and today was kind of in line with that. Now, when it came to other assets, the big movers were really Bitcoin. That was up 4.2%. Those futures were up 4.2% on the day. Oil was up 1.1%. Treasury yields fell a little bit. Gold was up a little bit. Dollar was down a little bit. And that was really it. There's still US-China trade talks going on in London, but still nothing, no news coming out of there. And so that was the market today. Relatively boring start to a week where I don't expect a lot of fireworks. Now, from time to time, we receive InvestTalk questions from our YouTube channel in the comment section. So let's go answer one of those questions now. Cookie Productions says, what are your thoughts on Guidewire software, GWRE? I've held it for a little bit, but I've been interested in dropping it and picking up Nebulous NBIS. Let's see, GWRE. And this is a name that has been on a tear. Develops web-based policy and claims management, underwriting, and billing software for the insurance industry. Tends to be a very good business. It's a consistent business. It's growing its earnings 67% this year, 14% next year. It is trading at a pretty high multiple, though, $257 per share. me pull up a chart here. And it is strong. So from a technical perspective, relative strength is 96. There's really no issues with it on that front. But let's look at Nebulous, the other one that they were looking at, NBIS. And let's see what this does. Netherlands-based provider of infrastructure and services to the AI industry. Well, this company doesn't make money. It's not like this is an AI play, this is an AI story, and that's about it. So what I would say is Guidewire probably a bit expensive after this recent move. It moved from 170 just back in April, early April, and now it's at 257. So a pretty dramatic move in a short period of time for good reason, right? I think it had good earnings. Let me pull that back up. So earnings that last quarter were up 22%. Revenue was up 22%. Earnings up 238%. So, but even if you go based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking about a 90 times multiple. I would be trimming at these levels because there's a lot of optimism built into this. But I wouldn't be moving that money into Nebulous because I'm just not going to buy a company that doesn't make money and it's just all about a story. So I'm passing on Nebulous and I would trim Guidewire. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Sammy in San Francisco asking about DocuSign. He's listening live on AM 1220 in the Bay Area. Sammy, do you own DocuSign or are you just looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it, Justin.
Okay. What is getting you excited about it? Is it the drop from nearly $300 per share now trading at $78? Okay. What about the fundamentals? Have you looked at earnings, growth, anything like that?
I actually read through their earnings report. But then we saw sort of a big dip right in the stock price. And the PE seems to be around 14 plus in that range. Mm-hmm. So starting to think of, getting in. So I thought I'll give you a call and see what you have to say.
Okay. Well, earnings next year are expected to come in about $3.88, up 1% this year, up 9% next year. Those estimates are being raised, though, so that's a positive here. And so if you go based on nearly $4 in earnings, it's a $78 stock. It's closer to a 20 multiple. So I don't really think I don't see where you get 14, but it still could be worth 20. It would need a couple of things. High profitability, which it has. Return equity is 60%. That is very high. That's very solid. And let me take a look here. Now, it was negative through 2021, 2022. So they've kind of figured out their business model. They've turned into really a good cash flow generation. It's leveled out here around $900 million over the past year in free cash flow. So you're not getting that growth anymore, but its enterprise value is only $14 billion. So that's about a 6% free cash flow yield, which is not amazing, but not terrible, especially considering that profitability. Now, what are they doing with that cash? They're not paying a dividend, and they have started to pay or buy back shares. So that's one thing I like about it is that they have no long-term debt. They can take that cash flow, they can buy back shares. And really at a rate of, 4, 5, 6% of their float each year. So that's good. The trends in the stock as well, I kind of like. So if I look at the chart, now the first thing I would say, don't expect to get back to 300 anytime soon. Just because it was there doesn't mean it has to go back there. It absolutely does not. It was egregiously overpriced, like a lot of the software names. were in 2021. So I wouldn't use that as a price target, but its technicals are certainly firming up, and I like that. So overall, I think it's about fairly valued. Okay. It has had a recent drop on earnings, but it's still within its kind of consolidation range between, call it 70 and about 95. Now we're trading at about 78. So it's near the lower end of that range. And if I zoom out to a weekly chart, it's still above its 100-day moving average, still in a general uptrend. So I like that. MACD is positive. So there's some nice things about DocuSign. My biggest worry, though, is that how much economic moat does it really have? You know, there's a lot of built-in user base, but, you know, it's just a, you know, Adobe has different ways to electronically sign things. There are other tools out there. They just are the leader. We use DocuSign for our clients. So obviously we like the product, but longer term, I worry about the profitability. So I would be on watch for that. But in the near term, I like the trends. I like the balance sheet. I like the cash flow. But watch for any deterioration in earnings growth going forward and that cash flow growth. And I would be quicker than most stocks to maybe dump it if it does go through, you know, a downtrend and break the, call it 70 level on the chart. But beyond that, I would say I give it a modest thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point on InvestTalk is about international travel. And there are some recent reports from the U.S. Travel Association that expects international travel to fall by 14%. Okay. It did fall by 14% in March. Okay. And the biggest drop was from Canada. About 20% of that was from Canada. Canadian tourists are the biggest quantity of tourists that we get here in the United States each year. Okay, biggest source of inbound travel to the United States. That's according to the World Travel and Tourism Council. Okay, and this is all about shifting sentiment and perception of the United States. And that is what is weighing on travel demand. This is surveying, you know, international travelers and what they're booking and why they're booking, etc. So flights booked to the U.S. for May through July travel window down 10.8% through the same period last year. And it's projected to be a total down 8.7% in international arrivals throughout 2025. Okay. So obviously the first couple months weren't as affected as March through likely the rest of the year. But total spending is expected to follow much more than that. Now, why is this significant? Well, last year, total spending from international travels was $181 billion. And that's already down from the $217 billion in 2019. And 10% of Americans work in the travel industry, and the expectations will be about 230,000 jobs lost this year in the travel industry due to the drop in demand. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready for your calls now on InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, this story. Retirees must deal with three tricky decisions. How much to withdraw annually, whether to purchase long-term care insurance, and the pros and cons of buying an annuity. That story tomorrow. But for now, let's play another listener question.
Hello. I was looking at investing in Saudi Arabia, specifically in ETF KSA. It's been pretty stagnant and flat for the last couple of years. But after Trump's visit and a lot of global tension since May, I'm looking for it to maybe go on an uptrend. It's primarily focused, I think, heavily on financial and, of course, with their oil, Saudi Aramco National. So just wanted your thoughts on that. Thanks. Great show.
Yeah, looking at KSA, which is the iShares MSCI Saudi Arabia ETF. And this, like you said, it's concentrated in financial services. 40% of this fund is financial services. Interesting enough, only about 11.5% is in energy. 14% basic materials. Not a whole lot in technology, only 2% there. Consumer defensives, 4%. Healthcare, 4%. Utilities, 4%. So kind of a low exposure there. So you're looking at the top holdings are a bank. Saudi Aramco is second. Third is a Saudi National Bank. Saudi Telecom is fourth. And then you have a mining, Saudi Arabia Mining, et cetera. So these are kind of quasi-governmental agencies as well. So there's some worry about that. And there's a lot of risk, geopolitical tension risk in the Middle East. Oil prices are down. So it's going to correlate with oil prices, even though the fund doesn't invest a lot in oil companies because it's just Saudi Aramco. It's still its economy is really driven by oil prices in a big way and the money flowing into the economy. So I think it's still going to be highly correlated to oil prices. Frankly, I don't see a big reason to get into this. The technicals are not anything to write home about, as you would imagine. The geopolitical risk there is high. And I think, you know, with the issues with Israel and Gaza, you have the Iran situation and just history of political tensions in the Middle East. I don't really see this as a great way to allocate funds the current time. Plus, the expense ratio on this is pretty high, 75 basis points. So I really don't see this as a great place to get in. So I'm passing on KSA, the Saudi Arabia ETF. Now let's touch a bit on tariffs. And actually, no, you know what? I want to get to this. I think this is more interesting. Let's look at alts. There was a recent paper published by the editor of the Financial Analyst Journal. His name is Richard Ennis. And the title of the paper is The Demise of Alternative Investments. And he looked at the performance of alts between 2016 and middle of last year. Now, he did this in an interesting way, mainly because there's not a uniform way of reporting performance. It's kind of the Wild West when it comes to regulation and transparency and reporting in the alt space. But and so he had to find a new way to figure out, okay, what is the true performance of these alternative assets? And what he did was he looked at endowments and he looked at pension funds because they will publish their returns along with their weightings of different asset classes, including equities, bonds, and these various types of alternatives. And so what he did was a regression analysis to say, okay, he basically backed out their weightings of different asset classes and said, okay, if it's, say, 30% in public equities, call it the S&P, and 20% in public bonds, right, and maybe 50% in alternatives, and they break down the alternatives into different categories like venture capital, private REITs, private equity, private lending, etc. And he backed out the returns of the total portfolio based on those weightings. And he was able to figure out that on average, pension funds Pension funds underperform the market portfolio by almost 1% a year over that time frame, and endowments by more than 2%. And it's all for similar reasons. For every extra percentage point of exposure to alternatives, annual performance falls by a bit more than 7 basis points. So there's a high correlation between how much they've allocated to alternatives and their actual performance of the total fund. Now the question is, which ones fared the worst? Well, based on this analysis, the worst one were private REITs, only 4.7% return. Not great. And the explanation for this is that these trustees and managers, they want it simple. They don't want to make a giant mistake. So what they do is they go with the big money managers, the big with the best reputations, and have sophisticated back offices that can deal with mandates and manage these portfolios that tend to be very large, billions and billions of dollars. But these also big managers are no fools. They have very high fees. They push high fee products. And what this showed was that the fees, the annual costs for these alts on average are more than 3%. 3%. And once again, the worst performing ones were real estate. But not much better was direct lending, meaning private lending. So private debt funds, that was only about 5%. Natural resources were 5.3. Infrastructure, 5.1. Energy, 7.3. Pretty good. Venture capital, the best, 8.5%. 8.5%. So those are the ones, you know, investing in very small startups, and some of them, you know, hit big returns. So, you know, while 8.5% is good, it's still lagging overall equity performance over that time period. And this is all in conjunction with some of the biggest players from Blackstone, BlackRock, KKR, State Street, Vanguard, all pushing alternatives to the average investor. And they're coloring it as democratization, saying it can reach almost any investor once that was only set aside for the wealthiest. But based on analysis of returns and fees, these are just not good investments. And there's a lot of shenanigans going on behind the scenes around valuations of these assets. So for example, one is Hamilton Lane Private Assets, bringing a lot of money because it's promising these big returns. But what they're doing is they are buying a lot of the bad deals at a discount within the private equity space, and they're revaluing them immediately up to kind of whatever they think it should be. And it's making their returns look a lot better than expected. Some of these have been marked up 1,000% or more on a single day, which is obviously impossible. So this is an area that I think you still want to steer very far away from, even as it's quote unquote being democratized towards the average investor. Okay. So understand this data and steer clear. Now let's pivot back to InvestTalk Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier from Minnesota.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Longtime caller here from Minneapolis. I have a question hopefully you gentlemen can help me out with, please. Approximately a month ago or so, I heard Luke, it was, I believe, say on the podcast, you guys have kind of departed from Graco, GGG, put monies elsewhere. I also have Graco, so I took that advice and I have departed from it also. A place I kind of am looking for to put that money, and I'm wondering what you think of it, is IRM, Iron Mountain. Would that be a good company to get into right now? I've been watching it for about a month, and it just has been going through the 90s, and I see today now it's over 100, but the whole market is up today, of course, because of the jobs report that came out today. Thank you very much for listening and answering my questions. Have a good day.
We're looking at Iron Mountain, and this is a name that has transformed its business from... I believe it used to be a document storage, and it would dispose of documents, you know, after a certain time period, et cetera. It was a very different businesses today, and it's moved more into the data center business. What's interesting, though, about the recent earnings expectations is that this year earnings are expected to fall, or it's a REIT, so it's a real estate investment trust, so it's funds from operation, but it's just a fall from 316 last year to $1.99, and then up to 233 next year. So I think that's one of the reasons why this is peaked, and it's now, even after this recent rally, it's up, it's down 22% from its 52-week high, and that's what worries me the most here, is why is this turning around in the midst of the supposed boom in AI data center development? Clearly, something is happening with their funds from operation that's going to neuter their ability to, for example, pay a dividend. And, or, you know, right now, their cash dividend pay ratio is negative 91%. Their payout ratio is 661%. So if free cash flow has gone deeply negative, to negative $890 million. Now, that could just be building out new capacity, but there's a lot of risk there. And that's what worries me. Return equity, return assets has gone down to only 66 basis points, very, very low, from a high around 4.5% back in 2021. So I just think it's too murky here. It wouldn't be a name that I would get excited to invest in because of those recent trends in growth of revenue, which has decelerated from the mid-teens all the way to 8% last quarter. And funds from operation are now flat and negative. So I'm passing on Iron Mountain because of not only the earnings trends, but also the technicals. I think there are better REITs out there within the space. Thanks for the call. Let's grab another question. This one came from overseas.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Lewis calling from Bolivia. I have a question today about Dow Chemical, DOW. I own it, and I'm looking at a loss and definitely interested in dollar cost averaging down at these levels. But I also get the feeling that I'm trying to catch a falling knife. So if you could help us with, give us some advice on companies like this that are way down, but these are long-term hold companies, you know, blue chip, if you will. I like what they're doing. I like what Dow does. I like that they're making something that we will need in the future, and there will always be demand for their products. But if you could just walk us through some of the pitfalls and what you're seeing with Dow, that would be greatly appreciated. I'll be listening on the podcast. Thanks for everything you do. Goodbye.
All right. Looking at Dow Chemical, and the issue here is simply debt. Their long-term debt is around $55 billion. Their market cap is around 20. Did I say 55? 15 billion, excuse me. Market cap is 20 billion. And their free cash flow has gone deeply negative, to about negative $500 million from a peak in 2022 of $6.5 billion. So that's how much their business has deteriorated. Earnings in 2021 had $8.98. Now remember, this is a time when everyone was buying physical products and there was high demand. Obviously, the demand for physical products has slowed considerably, and we have a trade war, and their business has just simply slowed. Earnings this year is down to 42 cents from $1.71 last year, $2.24 the year before, $6.25 the year before, and then $8.98 the year before that. So you see that steady slide, and estimates continue to come down for this year and next year as well. Revenues down 3% last quarter. Earnings were down 96% to only 2 cents per share. So when you have a lot of debt, and you have a cyclical business, and now it goes negative when it comes to cash flows in order to sustain that debt, and the cost of that debt is not going up because interest rates are going up, this is a recipe for what you're seeing now, which is, this is trading at $60 not long ago, about a year ago, and now we're at 29. So it's down 50% over the past year. And the technicals aren't really giving me a lot of hope for a turnaround. and neither are the earnings trends. The obviously trade war is, I guess you could say, getting better, but you know, we don't have any trade deals. You know, the 90-day pause is coming up. What's going to happen with that when that expires? I think it's a month from today. I think we're 60 days into it. So I believe it's July 9th, if I remember correctly. So I think you're throwing good money after bad here. I would not be buying more of it at this point. Things could easily get worse. This, just because it's a name that's been around a long time and has a lot of history, doesn't mean it can't go bankrupt. Just go look at what was in the S&P in the 70s, right? It's only a handful of those names are still around. So I would not be buying more now. In fact, I would have it out. If this ever drops below 25, you're out. You're out. We're good. But I wouldn't be putting more money. Now we're heading into our final break. So if you have any questions, I encourage you to get them in right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now. 888-99-CHART.
My name is Bijan. I'm listening for a few months. I had a quick question about jet ETF. Is it possible that airline ETF is going to see gains in the coming maybe year? Yeah, I'm looking forward to your answer. Thank you for your time.
All right, looking at JETS, J-E-T-S, and this is a very niche subsector, right, of the industrial space, and yeah, 88% is in the industrial industry, and the top holdings is actually United Airlines, Southwest Airlines, Delta Airlines, American Airlines, Air Canada, SkyWest, so you're talking about the airline business. Now, one thing about the airline business, it has improved dramatically over the years. And it all has to do with airline miles. It's kind of like this, it's like a mini bank in many ways. So that kind of keeps their business a little steadier than it used to be, which would be very wild when it came to earnings expectations. But that doesn't mean it's shielded from the traditional problems of the airline industry, which is overcapacity, high cost of jet fuel at times. You have unions that you have to deal with, et cetera. And that's my issue, is I just don't think this is a time with our main focus point talking about travel, a time to be getting a lot of exposure to the airline industry. So overall, I'm passing on JETS. I don't think it has great runway in the short term. I just don't think there's the demand for travel is going to accelerate from where it is now. It's still relatively robust, but I think the path of earnings expectations is probably more lower than higher in the medium term. Now let's pivot over to tariffs. And there was a recent survey of 640 different businesses by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. And they asked them about tariffs and how much they're passing along to the consumer. Now, those that were subject to a 10% tariff, which is, you know, the vast majority of imports right now, about 51%, they are expecting on average to pass along 51.1% of the tariff to customers. So about a 5% increase to customers. If they were experiencing a 25% tariff, they were passing along 47% of that to the end customer. Now, this is a big difference. In the first term, we did have tariffs, but they were relatively minor. And almost all of that was passed along to the consumer. Now, many firms believe their customers are price sensitive now. So tariffs are much bigger than they were in the first Trump administration. And so they don't feel like they can pass along a lot of it. Now, 19% of those in the survey indicated they plan to pass along all of it, though. So some feel like they can pass along the entire 10%. On average, if they were a business that was growing, they tend to pass along more of that tariff to the end consumer because they have pricing power, right? Business is growing, there's a lot of demand, they have pricing power. If sales were weaker, well, they're more worried about their price-sensitive buyer and competitiveness within the industry, and so they're passing along less of it. And small and medium-sized businesses were less likely to be able to pass through the costs. Right? They were more concerned about their end consumer and buyer, whereas the large firms, because of maybe some of them had some type of monopoly, economic moat around their business that allowed them to pass that along. I think first of Apple, right? If Apple is subject to a certain amount of tariffs, are they more able to pass along that increase versus your average, say, mom and pop retailer on the store, on the corner? I would say Apple is more able to do that because of their economic moat, their business model, and the demand for their end products. So interesting survey here to see what type of inflation, at least in the near term, this is likely to have for the economy. And what it looks to be on the product side, at least, be about 5%. 5%. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It's another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Not just here on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or investtalk.com, but also on our YouTube channel as well. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirements, whether it all really is working in this chaotic market environment, let's talk about it. We offer free, no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your financial path. Just head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.